Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Houlihan. Into the penalty area.
Very good morning to you. I'm Declan Drake, sitting in today for Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan. Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, a rather grey, overcast Saturday morning in Dublin's Docklands, and we certainly hope between now and 11 o'clock that we can brighten up your Saturday morning with the very best of review and preview of sport nationally and internationally, indeed locally as well, between now and 11 o'clock. So plenty to come on the programme. Our magic moment in sport today looks back at 1990. It's 30 years this week since the first leg of Cork's historic All-Ireland double, when the hurlers beat Galway in the All-Ireland final. Teddy McCarthy, of course, the only man to win All-Ireland medals in both codes in the 1 year. We'll be talking to another McCarthy, Seanie McCarthy, at about 10 minutes to 10 this morning. Sean was a member of that Cork hurling team that won that particular day. He'll be sharing his memories and thoughts with us on that. We'll also, of course, be looking back at rugby with Peter Breen just after 10 o'clock. And another Leinster victory last night in the Pro 14 as they qualified for the final with victory over Munster at the Aviva Stadium. We'll get Peter's thoughts on that. And also a look ahead to Ulster's semi-final in Scotland this evening. Massive weekend in Dublin hurling, of course, as well, with the semi-finals of the Senior A Hurling Championship taking place at Parnell Park tomorrow afternoon. And we'll be joined by our good friend, former Dublin hurler and current goalkeeping coach Brendan McLaughlin in the second hour to cast an eye ahead on those. And what a week it's been in football as well, and will be too. We had, of course, the first game for Stephen Kenny in charge of the Republic of Ireland away to Bulgaria on Thursday. Alan Cawley will be joining us about 20 to 11 or so this morning to give us his thoughts on that. Look ahead to the Finland game tomorrow evening at the Aviva Stadium. And, of course, in the SSE Electricity League, oh, what a massive clash we have at Talla Stadium this afternoon. The top two going head-to-head, Shamrock Rovers versus Bohemians from 2 o'clock. How's that one going to go? Alan's will have his thoughts for us on that. And, of course, a look at the rest of the weekend's programme as well. So, as I say, quite a busy show. Do feel free to get in touch with us. The usual methods. You can certainly text us on 087-1155-777. And we're on Facebook at Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Any sporting topics you care to bring up this morning, we'd be only too happy to hear from you. Now, as we always do, first thing on a Saturday morning, we have a look back at some of the sport that has taken place yesterday and indeed overnight around the world as well, and take a look at what's making the back pages of Ireland's newspapers this morning. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio now by Blaine O'Hara, our producer. Good morning, Blaine.
Good morning, Declan. How are you? Oh,
very well, sir. Very well. How are you this morning?
I'm very, very well.
Sure. Excellent.
Looking outside the window, as you said, it's a bit bleak, but sure, look, we're here to brighten up your morning.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for every Saturday morning between 9 and 11 here on Sunshine 106.8. Where are we starting in the papers? I think domestic football, Blaine, is where we're starting.
We are indeed.
There's one game in the top flight last night, and another bad night at the office for St. Pat's.
Very, very bad night. Their continued poor form run is just it's since the restart. Their only game that they have won was the first game back, yeah, it is quite a tough run of form for St. Pat's. But then you've got to look then on the contrary then, Declan. Waterford, their first 3 points since the return, and John Sheridan's men finally have gotten the result that they have been hoping for. And this result was fantastic for them because they've jumped from mid-table up to fourth place now in the domestic league, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Alan Colley will have something to say about that, I'm sure, a little bit later on, as well as looking ahead to the big one today, which is Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians Shelburne, also playing Cork City at 5 o'clock. The Stephen Kenny era began on Thursday night. Shane Duffy celebrating his signing for Celtic with another international goal, trademark Duffy header into the bottom corner deep in stoppage time to salvage a point for the Republic of Ireland. What's the reaction been generally in the media since that?
I think people have to kind of give Stephen Duffy and the Irish team a little bit of leeway.
Stephen Kenny.
That's it. So apologies about that. We've got to give Stephen Kenny a little bit of a bit of leeway. Anyway, there's been a lot of papers who have been criticising. You know, there was a lot of lacklustre performances for some players, but then some other players had shown absolutely fantastic, positive performance on the match. In the match against Bulgaria there on Thursday night. But all we have to look at is the fact that he hasn't had an awful lot of time with this team. You've got to look at, with being in the coronavirus, that he hasn't gotten to go to England to have a look at his players, to see them play in their clubs. He hasn't got to have an awful lot of training sessions with them. Apparently he's only had 2 training sessions with the team. So you've got to look at the positives for Stephen Kenny and what he has done, because we played very, very well, and it is a brand new kind of possession style play that Stephen Kenny is trying to infiltrate into the Irish team, which is very, very good to see, Declan.
When he got the job, of course, he would always have looked forward particularly to his first home game. I mean, leading your country out at the Aviva Stadium in front of 40-odd thousand people, whatever, would have been fantastic. Obviously, we know that's not going to be the case against the Finns tomorrow, but still a massively proud moment for him as he takes his place on the sideline. He has been there before, of course, with Dundalk and Derry City in FAI Cup finals, but to lead your country out in your first home game, that's really, really special.
It is going to be very tough on him, isn't it? The fact that when we are going to be playing Finland now tomorrow in the Nations League, he would have loved a full Aviva Stadium there to be chanting him on, to give as much support to him that he needs, and that he you know, to boost him and to show that we are supportive of him. But absolutely, it's going to be very tough, but I feel like he knows that the whole nation is going to be watching him tomorrow from our couches, so it definitely will give him a boost anyway.
Well, last Saturday, I think we were celebrating Matt Doherty's move from Wolves to Spurs and the windfall that it would gain for Bohemians, particularly here in Dublin as well. And of course, another Irishman who was on the move during the week, and quite a busy week he had too, was Shane Duffy. As we mentioned, he got the equaliser against Bulgaria on Thursday after getting his dream move to Celtic from Brighton on a season-long loan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is a very good transfer that did happen. You look at Brighton and their back, their defence, and they've just signed White on a new deal, who was with Leeds on loan last season, and securing him down on a long-term deal was absolutely brilliant. But then you look at, he was going to be replacing Shane Duffy. Do you know, it was going to be very, very difficult for Shane Duffy to break back into that team. And I'm delighted that now he is going to get his playtime in Celtic. And apparently it is a team that he has loved since he was a child. So he's delighted about this season-long loan that he will be playing in Scotland.
Yeah. An extra goal-scoring threat too for Neil Lennon from the set pieces, as he's shown countless times, not least on Thursday.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, sure, he has his prolific striker, up front, Neil Lennon does, but when you look at Shane Duffy, he's that player that can actually get you the points in the very, very end, as we saw anyway on Thursday night against Bulgaria.
Now, one man has dominated the footballing headlines all week. Will he, won't he, saga? Can he not, saga? And that, of course, is Lionel Messi and Barcelona. And lo and behold, the news comes out yesterday that the little Argentinian magician is staying at the new camp. Won't take them to court, he says, probably because he knows he won't win. But what do you make of all this Lionel Messi situation during the week?
It's a very strange one, Declan, though. It is a very, very strange one. I can understand why Messi had decided on wanting to leave. There's not much ambition. He has said it himself, the president of Barcelona is not showing much ambition, even though he's making these astronomical signings with Griezmann, Ousmane Dembele, you know, Philippe Coutinho. there just looks like there's no passion and ambition there in Barcelona. And I can understand why Messi wanted to leave. He wanted to pursue, you know, another challenge. He mightn't have, he want, I honestly think he wants to go back and play with Pep Guardiola. But you have to look at it though. Messi is in his last few years, and it was a very, very tough decision for Messi. Was he going to decide, I'm going to leave my boyhood club that has made me the player that I am, probably the greatest player to ever play the game, or do I look for another challenge in my final few years of football? It's a very strange one for Messi. But I think, you know, the decision that was made yesterday, as you said, I don't think Messi wanted to get into a legal court case with Barcelona.
But as far as I see it, Blaine, there's no winners here.
No.
Messi's not happy at Barcelona. So is he going to trundle on next year, right, just for the sake of it? And then Barcelona are going to lose out on a massive payout because he's out of contract next year. So, I mean, it's no win situation for either party there, really, is it?
It is very, very difficult. And there's been an awful lot of fans who have gone against Messi. And it's very, very sad to see when you look at a player of his stature and making Barcelona the team that they are in recent years. It's very, very tough, as you said. And but sure, look, he had said anyway after this whole case was put to bed, he had said that, I'm going to give it my all, Barcelona, and it just seems like he's going to take a year at a time, and hopefully he can push through for a transfer next year. Anyway,
well, certainly fantastic relief, I would say, in amongst Premier League supporters, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, etc., that he's not going to the Premier League, and great disappointment as well from the Manchester City faithful, who, when they are eventually allowed back into stadiums. I mean, to go and see Lionel Messi play every other week, it'd be just a bit of a dream, wouldn't it?
It would have been. And you know what? I was the first thing that I was saying to myself as an Arsenal fan. I was like, the first team that I want to go and see is Manchester City to see Lionel Messi. It would have been a bittersweet moment. I would have loved to see him in the Premier League, but I'm kind of happy that he's not coming.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Now, we mentioned there Manchester United as well, and they have continued their recruitment policy during the week with the capture of Donny van de Beek from Ajax. That's a big move, a 5-year contract as well, with an option for another year.
A very, very big move for United, and I think it's definitely a position that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wanted to you know, strengthen. I know he's got Bruno Fernandes, he's got Paul Pogba, and there's a lot of people who are thinking, you know, Donny van der Beek, he's an attacking midfielder. He's the exact same as Bruno Fernandes. He's very similar to Paul Pogba, but it's a good. He's a good squad player, as meaning that if one of them is not playing as well, they can just pop Donny van de Beek in. And the thing about it is he's also a very good defensive player as well, which we have seen in Ajax. He's very good. He is very versatile. He can play box to box. So I just wonder what Solskjaer, where he's going to play him.
And Chelsea have just dropped 80 million at the drop of a hat too for Kai Havertz from Bayer Leverkusen.
It's a very, very good deal, and Chelsea are really, they aren't messing around, are they? This is, I think, their sixth transfer now in this window. The players that they are signing is absolutely incredible. You've got Timo Werner, Hakim Ziyech, you know, Ben Chilwell, and now you've got Kai Havertz, who potentially is being regarded as one of the best prospects of an attacking midfielder. But Declan, I actually have a question here for you, I do, and something that's come up in my mind, theory-wise. You look at some teams who are wanting to go on a rebuild, but like Arsenal, like United, you could consider them as being a rebuild. You look at their academies and how good their academies are, and you're thinking to yourself, teams that have good academies, should they deliberately self-impose a transfer ban on themselves, as Chelsea had last year? So, for example,
but in Chelsea's case, now correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't a self-enforced transfer.
It wasn't
ban.
A self, but it's no. Just in brackets, yeah, brackets, a self-enforced one. Yeah. With them being banned last season from signing anyone, they had to use their loanees, their academy players, and sure, they had nothing to lose. They didn't. They had a new manager. They were going into this season with a brand new headspace. But they did very, very well. They got to the FA Cup final. They got to top four. They've made it back into the Champions League. But they've had a year off now without signing anyone. And then look at this now. This year, they have just gone at it and have signed so many players who will start in their starting 11.
Well, football now, Blaine, is the business that demands instant success. you know, if you're not successful, you can get sacked after four or five games. We've seen it countless times cross-channel in England. So when a manager is in a job, he knows he's only a few games away from getting the sack, so he has to have the strongest possible squad available to him. And of course, they will, if the money is available, go out and buy the tried and the tested rather than introducing a 19 or 20-year-old prospect. So that's just unfortunately the way it goes. Yes, as a supporter of a club myself who has an academy, you'd like to see more players, particularly homegrown players or players from the town that the club is in, making its way through, because that strengthens the connection between the club and fans. But unfortunately, the business world of football just dominates that. If you've got 80 million sitting in the bank, like what Chelsea have there to sign Havertz and United to sign Donny van der Beek, you'll just go out and do it. But unfortunately, the gap between the haves and the have-nots in football just gets wider and wider and wider. Every day, nearly in England, in the lower leagues, you're seeing clubs in trouble. Macclesfield Town, Bolton Wanderers were in trouble. Other clubs are perilously close to the brink as well. And yet clubs can just sign a cheque or a draft, whatever, for 80 million and away you go. So, unfortunately, I think the nature of football, the business of football, just demands success. Anyway, just staying on football before we move away from it, off the pitch, the FAI Interim Chief Executive Gary Owens has informed the FAI of his decision not to apply for the position on a permanent basis on Wednesday. He's been in it since January, and of course Niall Quinn has been Deputy CEO while also acting as a pundit on Virgin Media Sport as well. Did the Ireland game against Bulgaria on Thursday. So where do you think we go from here now with this? Is Niall Quinn likely to stay in the FAI, or is he likely to step away and just concentrate on his other business interests, including his media work?
I think it's the first suggestion that you said there, Declan. It looks like the Mirror had suggested that he's going to be on his way out of the FAI with Gary Owens. There's not a lot of people who are supporting his backing of Gary Owens, apparently. And there's a lot of supporters who are saying, do you know what, he should leave for his backing of Gary Owens and just go into punditry, because they think that that's his only only, you know, talents, they're saying, which I think is a bit...
Yeah, but what about the situation where the interim chief executive of a sporting association is acting as a pundit commentating on his own national team?
You can't do that. You can't do that. It's very biased, it is. Absolutely. And also, as well, you've got two jobs there as well. I feel like you should be focusing more on being the CEO. And that's why he's not getting the support from fans. It's if you're being a pundit and you also are being, you know, in contention to be the CEO, it's not going to work. Not at all.
Interesting times ahead. Okay, let's move away from football now to rugby. And it's Pro 14 semi-final weekend. A great win for Leinster last night, Blaine, over Munster at the Aviva Stadium, continuing their tremendous record against the men from the south and reaching another final.
Absolutely. And I know there's a lot of people who are hoping that Munster could break this unfortunate curse that they have at the moment, not being able to beat Leinster. I don't know how long now, it's about 8 games or something like that, where they have not beaten Leinster. But there's an absolutely fantastic article, actually, in the Irish Independent, and it's got a fantastic one saying, Deja Blue for Munster. It says, Leinster young guns read off the same old script as Van Graan's men fall at the semi-final hurdle again. And there's a great piece by Rory O'Connor who's talking about how far Munster are behind Leinster and how far Leinster are ahead of Munster. And they're two completely different teams to the powerhouses that they used to be back in the time.
A lot closer to the first game when they met a couple of weeks back than what it was last night. 13 points to 3 is how it finished there. And Murrayfield hosting the second semi-final this evening. Ulster taking on Edinburgh. We'll have the thoughts of Peter Breen on both those games a little bit later on in the programme. Let's move to cycling, Blaine, and another instance, if you like, of the strangeness of 2020, the Tour de France taking place in the month of September when it's usually in July. And Sam Bennett has surrendered the green jersey after the seventh stage of the Tour.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a bit upsetting. He was among a group of sprinters dropped earlier in yesterday's stage. And Peter Sagan has reclaimed the green jersey, while Wout van Aert won today's stage. Yesterday's stage. So Adam Yates retains the overall leader's yellow jersey.
Great. Now, athletics. Sir Mo Farah continues to be a huge, huge name in the sport, and another fantastic achievement for him last night in the Diamond League meeting in Brussels.
Absolutely incredible, isn't he? Absolutely incredible. I had looked at one of his press conferences afterwards, and it's been absolutely incredible. He says that he wasn't even tired. So what had happened is he had broke the 1 hour world record yesterday. The record was previously made back in 2007, and the previous record was 21.285 kilometers in an hour. And Sir Mo Farah, has broken that by 21.330 kilometers. And as I said yesterday, it looked like that he didn't even try. He literally just passed the finish line, and what an incredible achievement. And apparently it's his first ever world record outdoors.
Who was the name of the previous person?
Practicing this before now the show, and we're going to get it now. I think it's Haile Gebrselassie.
That's a very good attempt. That's an excellent
Thank
attempt.
Thank you very
I'll
much,
I'll give you a 9.5 out of 10 for that one. Okay, now to golf, and what a big week it was for Rory McIlroy off the course as well, himself and his lady wife welcoming their first child. So congratulations to the McIlroys on that particular achievement. And he's back to doing what he does best in golf's Tour Championship. He's only, what, four shots off the lead?
He is indeed. He's four shots off the lead. And Justin Johnson and John Rahm are both the men he has to catch. Where they are 13 under par at the top of the league. But as you said, absolutely congratulations to Rory McIlroy on and off the field for being a brand new father this week.
Yes, indeed. Now, tennis, the US Open is on, of course, in Flushing Meadow at the moment. And Naomi Osaka and Novak Djokovic are leading the way there. Djokovic has had a controversial kind of a week, hasn't he, with comments about setting up a rival players' union and things like that. But again, he's doing the business on the court where it matters most.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's delivered again, and he's gotten through on day three of the US Open. Unfortunately, it is quite sad now for the British players. They've both in the singles, the US Open tennis. Both Dan Evans and Cameron Norrie, both players, had lost yesterday, so there is no British representative in the US Open anymore.
That's a shame.
Which is a shame, absolutely.
Absolute crying shame, that is. Anything else grabbing your attention in the sporting press this morning?
I know we spoke an awful lot about football, we did, but actually one thing has grabbed my attention, two stories anyway. The PFA Player of the Year has been nominated, the list has come out, and four Premier League champions from Liverpool have been nominated.
Sorry, just say that phrase again at the start.
Four Premier League champions.
Yeah, it's okay.
Premier League champions. Yes, I'm going to pronounce it correctly.
No, it's just the fact that it's Liverpool Premier League champions in the one sentence.
It's a strange one, isn't it? It's very, very strange to say. It's been a long time since we said it, but yeah, absolutely. But anyway, four of their players have been nominated. You've got Virgil van Dijk, Sadio Mane, Jordan Henderson, and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And then the two remaining players in that list are Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne from Manchester City. So Declan, what do you think anyway? Who do you think deserves the PFA Player of the Year award this year?
Virgil van Dijk, followed by Kevin De Bruyne for me. That'd be my top two, yeah.
Really, do you think Van Dijk has had a bit more of a effect on Liverpool winning the league this year? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. He is one of the main pieces in the jigsaw, himself and the signing of the goalkeeper at that time.
Alisson Becker, yeah.
He's done remarkably well. Watched him playing for the Netherlands last night in the Nations League as well.
He was brilliant.
Against Poland, he was outstanding as well. So for me, he would be my choice for that award.
Absolutely. I'd be now kind of inclined to go for two players for Liverpool now. I'm looking at either Jordan Henderson, the captain, who has really, 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 driven his team to win the Premier League. And then Actually, apologies about that. It's not two players from Liverpool. I'm actually thinking Kevin De Bruyne as well, because what an outstanding season he has had.
I was just
thinking,
did I miss something major in the transfer news overnight?
Kevin De Bruyne has gone to Liverpool, what? No. But yes, no, Kevin De Bruyne, I think, as well, should deserve it as well. But as we've seen the last 2 years, it's been given to Liverpool players with Mohamed Salah and Van Dijk the last 2 years. So I don't know, is it going to be given 3 years in a row now to Liverpool?
De Bruyne might...
He might just get,
and would absolutely deserve it if he got it as well. He has had an outstanding season, an outstanding period, indeed, at Manchester City, and obviously disappointed waking up to the news this morning that he won't have Lionel Messi as a teammate next season at the Etihad. Okay, Blaine, thanks very much indeed for going through that with us this morning. Blaine O'Hara, our producer. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. It's Declan Drake with you here until 11 o'clock this morning. Up until quite recently, the All-Ireland Hurling Final will be played on the first weekend of September. That, of course, changed a couple of years ago. And 1990, well, that's a very special year for fans of Cork GAA, because it was the year that the county won the All-Ireland Hurling and Football Double in the 1 year, the only team to have done it. One of the men who played his part in that victory for Cork Hurlers that particular Sunday afternoon was Ballinhassick clubman Sean McCarthy, wing back wearing the number 5 jersey. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Oh, very well, sir. Very well indeed. Thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. I'm sure you've had a lot of people over the last few weeks talking about this particular occasion on its 30th anniversary. What stands out for you in particular about it, Sean, looking back now all those years later?
I suppose looking back now, Declan, it was the achievement that it was, that both the hurlers and the footballers achieved All-Ireland glory in the one year, which has eluded everybody else since. We didn't realise at the time the fantastic success it was. We were just quite happy to be part of a winning All-Ireland team. But 30 years later, the years have flown. But it's been absolutely fantastic looking back in it. And it's only now that you realise that there were great times, and with COVID and everything, and this year's All-Ireland series being kind of thrown up in the air and running in later, you just appreciate really of the great times that we have.
There's always pressure, Shawnee, going into a team on an All-Ireland final day. But was there any extra pressure, do you think, on that team, that particular day, considering what was at stake that year, in terms of the double?
Absolutely not, Declan. I suppose we came, like, I suppose I speak for the hurlers' point of view. We came on the back of winning an All-Ireland in 86 and then being going off the radar, and Tipperary really dominating Munster for the next couple of years. So we went to Munster final in 1990, and we were no hopers going in. And I suppose Babs Keating, if people might remember, Babs Keating was the Tipperary manager, and he made a comment 10 days before that at Munster final saying that donkeys don't win derby, basically saying that we were no hopers. And we ended up the Charlers that day, and we competed with Tipperary, a fantastic Munster final, and beat them. And we went in against Galway into the All-Ireland final, and we were, again, underdogs, no hopers. And it turned out to be a cracker, like 5-15, like we scored. Neither the hurlers nor the footballers would have actually contemplated it being a double. It was ever done before. It hasn't been done since. But we were all focused on just our own job, and us as hurlers were going in, and our attitude was, let's go up there, let's give it our all, let's challenge Galway the game. And it turned out to be a fantastic day, and we came out on top.
Yeah, you mentioned the Munster final that year, the Mark Foley final, of course, with a hat-trick of goals, which is legendary stuff indeed. The final itself, Shawnee, the first half didn't go so well from a Cork point of view. And there's a legendary story doing the rounds about Canon Michael O'Brien, who was your coach or manager at the time, and a comment he made at half-time that only three fellas apparently could hold their heads up for their performances in the first half. And Kevin Hennessy reportedly said, well, who are the other two, Cannon? Did that actually happen?
Absolutely, Declan. I suppose the captain was a legend, and he would have been a divisional man of mine. He would have been just living maybe 10 or 12 miles away from where I live. And Cannon was a very, very well got guy. He would have been training the UCC team. He would have trained my divisional team at the time. And Cannon, I suppose, took over the team in 89. And he would have rang me soon, I said, maybe a week after taking over the team. And there was no mobile phones back then. And he would spend maybe an hour on the phone to you, telling you what he expected of you, where they were going, his ambition. He was a very, very ambitious person, but also he was a very knowledgeable guy. But he surrounded himself with selectors that were, I suppose, had previous Martin Coleman, Gerard McCarthy. Gerard was the youngest person ever captain a Cork team. He captained Cork at 19 or 20 years of age to win an Ireland. Martin Coleman, 3 in a row. Brian Murphy, our secretary back then. And Cannon he was a motivator, but he was a very, very knowledgeable guy about the game. And he was just a fantastic guy. And I suppose what really drove him on that year was what Babs Keating said. The Cannon would be very proud of Cork, very proud of the history of Cork and Cork's achievements. And he, when Babs Keating said donkeys don't win derbies towards our team in the Munster final, that drove him on more to try and achieve what was the elusive All-Ireland final. And even Dundon, with Billy Morgan training the footballers 2 weeks later to winning the football All-Ireland and achieving the double. And it kind of panned out to be that kind of an All-Ireland.
Yeah. The key moment of that game, I think you know now what the point I'm going to come to here. Martin Nocton cutting in from the right-hand side, the shot into the canal goal. Ger Cunningham, who of course went on to manage Dublin at a later stage in his career, was the goalkeeper. The ball hit him on the top of the nose and went out over the end line and was signalled wide. Should have been a 65. Cork went down. I think Tomás Mulcahy might have got a goal soon after that. A real moment to look back on, wasn't it? And think, yeah, when you get breaks like that in an All-Ireland final, you get the feeling it's going to be your day.
Absolutely. I suppose we went in, as you said earlier, we went in at halftime after playing very poorly, and the Cannon took some players into the toilet area in Crow Park. There was 3 players taken in. The door was closed. It was an all-merciful dressing down. And then second half, game ebbed and flowed, and Galway threw everything at us in the second half, and we kept plugging away, and we got goals at crucial times. But Martin Nocton, I was actually marking him that day. Fantastic player.
Didn't want to mention that, Sean, how he slipped you.
Fantastic athlete. But it was a 65, 70 back in those days, 70 yards. He cut in, Ger saved the ball, it was off his nose, went down, and we scored. Tomás Mulcahy scored the goal. But you take those chances, and it comes with the look of the game. But it was just a classic game of hurling. It was just unbelievable. 5-15, you have 20 scorers versus Galway scores. It was an amazing game of hurling, you know.
Yeah, and you're from a club just outside Cork City there.
You can say small, Declan. It's okay.
Well, by Dublin standards, I suppose. But look, you can't. That the heartbeat of the community is the GAA down there. Absolutely no doubt about that. But the club itself, I mean, you mentioned Martin Coleman there, who's a club mate of yours as well. To be part of that success is extra special for your neighbours and your friends as well, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's as you said, we're a country club. Previous to that, Martin Coleman had been in goal for Cork in the 70s and won 3 in a row. I used to go over watching the training. My club and Martin Coleman would make small goalie holidays for me when I was 6 or 7 or 8 years of age. So I suppose I always tried to aspire to what Martin achieved. I suppose I'm the youngest of 7, and my sister had played in Crow Park. I had gone up to Dublin numerous times. My sister has 8 All-Ireland Camogie medals with Cork. She was always trying to, she was chasing the dream of equaling Christy Ring's nine All-Ireland medals, but it evaded her eventually. So I suppose hurling, the sport in my club and in my family were ingrained in us. I lived across the road nearly from the GAA pitch, and it was just a fantastic, you know, like when I came home from school, I dropped my school bag, changed my clothes, and I was down hurling until either my mother called me for my dinner or my mother called me to come home and do my school homework. And it was just ingrained to us. We were a country club, but we were a very proud country club. And to this day, we've still, our current sub-keeper, our Cork, is Patrick Collins, and we've given some great hurlers since to Minor on 21. And I think every club, whether you're Cork, Dublin, you know, Tipperary, Kilkenny, for every sports person, their dream is to, number one, be the number one player in your club, and number two, then to be the number one player or to be part of your inter-county team. And we just had, it's fantastic. You never, while you're playing, you don't think about that, but it's in years later, you look back at it and you said, you know, they were fantastic times, made some fantastic friends, and it's when people come up to you, genuine GAA supporters, and tell you, like, you know, the fantastic memories they had and what it meant to them. You really, really appreciate what we achieved. Yeah. And, you know, I'm still very proud of it, and very proud of it for my family and, you know, for my club. It's just been brilliant.
Of course, that was your second All-Ireland medal, because you'd won in 86 as well. One of the most enduring memories of that year afterwards was, I think, when the footballers came back to Cork, having beaten Meath the day before to complete the double. You had the two captains, Larry Tompkins and Tomás Mulcahy, on a stage in Cork City Centre and swapping the trophies. I mean, that was an iconic picture, do you know, to see Larry Tompkins hold the McCarthy Cup and that, and vice versa. Special, special moments.
Very, very special, Declan, and I suppose there was a few episodes during the last week or two leading up to the hurling All-Ireland and then maybe the football All-Ireland. I suppose we would have trained in different parts of the city. We wouldn't have come across the footballers much. The only link we had really at the time was Teddy McCarthy and Dennis Walsh, who would have played both on the hurling and the football team. But for us as hurlers, wouldn't have come across the footballers much. But the Tuesday night before we played the hurling All-Ireland, Billy Morgan came into our dressing room and spoke to us, and we would have believed captain of Cork footballers in 73, a fantastic sportsman, a fantastic guy, but he spoke so passionate about Cork, and for us, like for me personally, it gave me an extra lift of hearing somebody, whether it didn't matter what sport you were, but because you were Corkman, telling us that they were 100% behind us, and then hearing afterwards that the Cannon did the same for them. And the Cannon went in, travelled with the footballers to Dublin that weekend. He said Mass. We all stayed in the Burlington Hotel. He said Mass for the footballers on the Sunday morning, and told them how much it meant and what we had achieved and how much that we were behind them. And I suppose then coming back to Cork, I suppose people asked me what was the biggest memory or the most memorable moment of that year, and expect me to say that it was winning the All-Ireland, but the Munster final, but it wasn't. It was realising we were invited up to watch the football All-Ireland as a team 2 weeks after winning the All-Ireland hurling, and people standing up inside in the Cusack stand and Cork supporters coming up to us and saying, you don't realise what you've achieved. You don't realise what you've given to us when the footballers won. You've won the double. This is a unique moment. Thank you so much. And it was then all the memories and all the emotions really hit me. And coming back to Cork just added to that, as you said, with the two captains, with the two cups up on the stage. Yeah. Like, that memory still vivid to me 30 years later. It's just fantastic. Like, it's unique. I'm so proud to be part of it and just delighted to be. It was such a memorable moment, and, you know, it's something that I'll never forget until the day I die.
Hopefully, Seanie, we're not too far away from the 2020 Championship, which is going to be more of a sprint than a marathon this year with the COVID situation and that. 1990, the last time the double was won. Cork had another go at it, I think it was 9 years later. Didn't quite come off that particular time, but nobody has come close to it since. Can you see that achievement being replicated in your lifetime?
In my lifetime? I suppose, Declan, I said it before, if I want anyone to win it, of course I want Cork to be the only one to beat our record. Might go down well in Dublin. I struggle to see anybody achieving it, being honest, and especially this year. I see it with our own club championship at the moment, and it's no different than Dublin. I've been watching your updates on social media as well about how the club championship is going in Dublin. I suppose it's going to be so condensed this year. I don't think it can be achieved. If it is, fantastic. We've had our fun 30 years later, you know, so be it. But it's going to be very difficult for any county to put together back-to-back. And I don't think the double, from a point of view from, I suppose, a dual star like Teddy Mack and Dennis Walsh, I don't think that will ever happen again, because there's too much pressure, there's too much commitment on either hurling or football. Now you even see it now, I don't know, is it in Dublin, but in Cork, a lot of our underage have to choose whether they play hurling or football. They can't do both. So from that point of view, I don't see that happening. But look, if it happens, it happens, Declan. I'm quite happy to be part of our dream. Our dream will never go away. But I think it's going to be quite difficult for any county to achieve what we achieve. But if it is, best of luck to them.
Very good. Sean, absolute pleasure. Again, appreciate you taking our call this morning to look back on that memorable September Sunday from 1990, and the second one as well, when Billy Morgan led Cork to the All-Ireland double. Never to be forgotten year, never to be forgotten moments. Again, thanks indeed for taking our call, and the very best of luck to yourself and your family down there in Ballinasic.
No problem, Declan.
The great Sean McCarthy there, wing back on the Cork team of 1990. Our magic moment in sport. We asked you to send in your messages regarding classic All-Ireland finals that you remember. We've got some here. Linda in Inchicore. Has to be Kilkenny versus Tipperary 2014 for me. The first match that started an absolutely superb rivalry between the two at that time. Best match I've ever seen. Thanks for that, Linda. Martin and Clonsilla, Kilkenny versus Tip 2009. Superb standard of hurling. Again, a never to be forgotten moment there. And one from Ellen in Cabra. As a Galway girl, it's got to be Galway's 1980 All-Ireland victory, our first since 1923. The sight of the maroon and white lifting the McCarthy Cup at Croke Park is one I will never, ever forget, even though we've done it a few times since. Yeah, and maybe even do it again this year, who knows. Great interview with Seanie McCarthy. As a Cork native, it has to be 1990, the last team ever to win the double. In a text, I just caught the corner of my eye here on the screen in studio. It's from Clive in Ballyfermot. Morning, lads. Enjoying the show so far. I assume you will give good time to Leinster Rugby's victory last night over Munster. Well, that's absolutely perfect timing, because that's what we're coming on to now on the programme. Delighted to be joined on the phone by our good friend and colleague, Peter Breen. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
Oh, very well, sir. Very well indeed. How are you today?
Good, probably good. A lot better than the population of Munster, I'd imagine. They were licking their wounds, so, but all good.
A 24th consecutive victory, I believe, for Leinster last night. 13 points to 3 at an empty Aviva Stadium, unfortunately. And I'm looking at a quote here, Peter, from Leo Cullen, Leinster head coach. He says, and I quote, "It was brutal." What's your assessment of it?
Well, there's two ways you can look at brutal, either appalling or completely brutish and physical. I think it was probably a case of both. It's a funny one. Like, it's rarely that these games produce outstanding quality rugby, in the sense that they're usually really hard fought. There's a lot of tension. There's always something at stake. And you're playing against teams who know each other so well. So it's very rare that you get an outstanding free-flowing game that has 50 points in it. And I suppose the match 2 weeks ago was probably an exception, but I think that 2-point defeat for Munster probably flattered them. Leinster would have picked up a lot where they need to improve for last week's game over much-changed Leinster, actually, who beat Ulster quite easily. And then for last night, again, I think 10 points flattered them. And I suppose the temptation now, and I imagine there'll be some fallout in the media over the next couple of days, will be to lay the boot into Munster. They're in trouble, and there's no two ways about it. It's not good news for Irish rugby. They were pretty clueless last night, and you look at, even though they're without a number of players, and they were very unlucky that in the match, corresponding match a couple of weeks back, that they picked up a number of big player injuries, the likes of Snaeman, John Klein, Dave Kilcoyne. They're not looking like they're improving at the moment. They really need a good long look at themselves before the Pro 14 season starts up again in a few weeks. And while they have a lot of quality, and they have so much going for them in terms of the loyalty of their fans, they have an amazing stadium, they have so much, they're great, they seem to have great peripheral coaching quality, there's something wrong with Munster that has to be really looked at now, because you can't keep on looking at excuses, you can't keep on scratching their heads and wondering why they're being left behind and why they've lost 10 semi-final defeats in a row and why they've only won once up in Dublin in 16 attempts. Like, they're not good enough statistics, particularly the likes of someone like me who in his mid-20s, you're looking enviously at Munster and the quality they were producing. I think Ronan O'Gara raised a really good point in his column yesterday that Munster are probably being force-fed too much of what's happened in the past and they need to write a new chapter in their history. And it's a worry because it's going to have knock-on effects for Ireland in lots of ways. And while it's great, we'll move on to Leinster shortly, and obviously Ulster are still in contention with a semi-final tonight. You know, the Munster situation isn't something that people could just nilly-willy brush off and say, that's it. It's going to be a really long couple of weeks for them to look at what they're doing. All the coaches are going to have to bear the brunt of criticism. And they're really going to have to look really deep and very honestly from within and see how they're going to salvage something, because there is a hell of a lot of quality there, but they don't seem to be utilising the quality players to the best of their abilities. And I'm talking the likes of Keith Earls, the likes of Andrew Conway. They've made some signings. Dalende looks promising. He looked like he really got into the game. But the game was really mentally lost by the time he really got into it in the second half. And I'd worry about them at half-back. Up front, they're reasonable. They've got big-game players. We've seen the quality of what Stander and what Peter O'Mahony can do at international level. Tyke Byrne is a quality player. But, you know, they need more. You can't keep on looking at the same players all the time and expect them to deliver 10 out of 10 every week. It's just physically not possible. And with the way in which the rugby calendar is going to be fixed for the next period, they're not going to be able to play every game. You know, you're talking about Leinster certainly have a schedule where they've only one free weekend up until the end of January. So immediately that says to you, okay, well, there's no way Johnny Sexton and the key guys are going to be able to play every week on week. And Munster are going to be in a very similar situation. So whether it's a case of building their depth, whether it's a case of just, you know, going for broke with a few of the younger players, because they have invested heavily in top-class players this summer. And, you know, otherwise at that point, it comes down to coaching. It comes down to what way do Munster want to be represented? How do they want to be perceived? Because there's no real clear game plan. And while you go back to Leo Cullen's comments, it was a brutal game to watch. And this isn't, you know, I'm as passionate about rugby as the next person, but it was really, really poor. And rugby generally seems to have that problem at the moment. Like, there's a match going on in Super 14 down in New Zealand at the moment, a trial game, and it seems to be light years ahead of what's going on. And that's no criticism of Leinster, really, because Leinster keep on doing what's expected of them. And I think that when you come into a final next week when they're going to play Edinburgh or Ulster, you know, Leinster didn't really give away a lot of what the game plan is going to be. So, you know, they have a lot of tricks up their sleeve, and you'd imagine that they'll really kick on from here.
When you look at the scoreline, Peter, for Leinster to limit Munster in 80 minutes of top-class rugby to just one score, that's a tremendous effort from the Leinster perspective as well, isn't it?
Yeah, the great Leinster sides from Michael Checa, and he brought that hard-nosed edge into Joe Schmidt. It was built on a strong defence. And it's all well and good having the all-singing, all-dancing back line and back row forwards who pop up everywhere and score. But if it's not built on a strong defence and if it's not built on a strong pack effort, you're really going to go nowhere. And that's something that's been a process for many, many years. Leo Cullen would have brought that edge. Shane Jennings would have brought that edge when you know, back in Leinster, back in the heyday in the late 2000s. And you look at it now, you know, they really are. When you see the quality, nobody knows, bar maybe one or two positions, who the best 15 is. And that's when you look at the squad who started the game against Ulster, who many would perceive to be a B team. And then you see players performing again last night. You're wondering now, how is Josh van der Fleer, Dan Levy, how are they going to get into this team? When Will Connors, Caelan Doris was a revelation, but he's going to be, he could very well be a Lion by next summer if the Lions tour goes ahead. He's that good. And, you know, Will Connors was outstanding at 7. Jack Conan was so strong again at 8. Like, these are really talented players who have built up a huge amount of experience, a huge amount of know-how playing Pro 14 over a long period. And Leinster coaching team haven't been afraid to do that. They haven't been afraid to promote from within. Of course, it's easier when you've got good players and you can recognise good players, but you still have to have the guts to go with them and give them that exposure in big games. And they haven't been afraid to do that. And ultimately, any great club in the world, in any sport, when they can do that and they can have faith in young people and give them the faith to make mistakes as well and give them you know, the confidence to go out and express themselves, you'll reap the rewards from that. Yeah. And I just think now, you look at, talk about selection headaches, with hopefully Tadhg Furlong, Dan Levy, James Ryan to come back into the mix either next week or for the Saracens game the week after. That's really, really encouraging for Leinster, for Ireland. And it just shows they must kill each other in training every week trying to get picked. It's nearly like a Dublin GA situation. It's going to be you know that if you get into that top 15 team, you know, you're really doing something well. But it doesn't mean that if you're not in the team that you're dropped and there's a fallout. It's the management of that squad has been so, so impressive over a very long period. And long may it continue, because there's going to be injuries, there's going to be suspensions, things are going to happen where people won't be available. And the management of your resources is really going to be telling now for Leinster as they hopefully push on and claim some glory this year, which they deserve.
Yeah, it's a fantastic position for Leo Cullen to be in, to know that his second string, if you can call them that, 15, is just as strong as his first 15. And if he suffers an injury to a key player, he has someone of a similar level of ability to come in. So the Leinster bandwagon rolls on. They're back in another Pro 14 final, and of course the Heineken Cup has to come yet. So now, Peter, attention will turn to the other semi-final taking place tonight between Edinburgh and Ulster. The possibility of an All-Ireland Pro 14 final, what do you think of that?
Well, it's a 50-50 on paper, but I'm not entirely convinced of it by Ulster at all, and I'm not trying to be a doomsday, I'm not trying to be parochial and wind up people from other provinces. Like, the reality is, like, I'm looking at social media this morning and I'm looking at one of their players who's on Instagram and I'm going, what the hell are you doing? This is the biggest game of your season. Yeah. No, but like, and I'm not going to call out the name. It's like, but I'm kind of scratching my head going, where is your priority here? You know, you were absolutely destroyed against Leinster last week. You're supposed to have your head screwed on for your biggest game of the season and you're on social media. Like, this isn't good enough, and this isn't championship winning behaviour. And the sooner these players realise to wind their neck in, and that's a cultural thing. That's not just, you can blame the players, but you're looking at the whole management of this squad and going, what is going on here? Ulster, again, have had a lot of resources pumped into them, but they've repatriated a lot of players, predominantly from Leinster, into their squad. It's great. They're getting good exposure. There's a lot of talent there. You know, and I'm looking at the Jack McGraths and the Madigans, Cooneys, really, really good players, Marty Moore. But you're going, lads, like, how do you want to be defined? You want to be remembered as a team who got to a Pro 14 semi-final. Is that success? It's not success. It can't be success. And Edinburgh, under Richard Cockerell, who's done a really, really good job there, they've got a number of internationals back this week. They're playing at home. Okay, you can say, you know, there's no crowd there and that'll limit the, you know, the challenge of going over there. That's wrong, you know. Edinburgh have Scotland stars coming out. They've got the likes of Mark Bennett, Rory Sutherland, WP Nell, Ben Toole, Stuart McNally. They're all back in the mix. They're all going to be hungry. And really, the job that Cockerell has done to reclaim that number one Scottish side from Glasgow, and Glasgow were flying for the last couple of years, you know, that's testament to what he's brought. When you talk about hard edge, when you talk about values, when you're talking about being tough, making tough decisions, redefining the culture of a club, that guy is the embodiment, certainly from the outside looking in. I don't know him personally. But you're looking at the manner in which they play. They're not the best team in the world, but they are efficient. They work hard for each other, and they've got their head screwed on. And if that's enough, if they can manage to do that at a high level against an Ulster team tonight, they'll win. Okay. Ulster have talent. Ulster have good coaches. Ulster have resources. They're a very strong following. They've got all that good stuff around them. But just on the field, they don't seem to be getting it right. And but whereas I think the Ulster bench does give them a bit of a chance tonight. They've got Ian Madigan, they've got Jack McGrath, Alvie Mathewson. And I think that was the difference between the teams last night. When you look at Leinster and Munster, Leinster have a very strong bench. Munster, and we've talked about they were down resources because they've been quite depleted in recent weeks. But again, you just didn't sense that they had that depth. Because don't forget, for a lot of these players, it's only their second game in 6 months. It's going to take them a natural period of time to get up to speed and to hit high-intensity matches is a really big ask straight away. And expect them to hit their straps. So, put it this way, if Ulster win tonight, I don't think Leinster will be losing too much sleep about it over the week that happens. And I think if Edinburgh win tonight, you know, that's really going to make everyone sit up. Because Ulster, if they've shown their hand with more or less, I'd say, 80 to 90% of their full team were playing last week. And it'll involve a massively dramatic change in their attitude to turn around and win tonight and then back that up the following week. Like, provincial rivalries will always get you up to a point and adrenaline will get you through that. But you've got to be smart. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to be tough. Yeah. And you really, everyone wants to win, but you've got to prove more than that. You've got to have more than desire. And I don't know, Ulster, just there's so much talk coming out of them. I'm not convinced that they're nearly trying to convince themselves that they're good enough to be at this level. They're not. Certainly not at the moment. I hope they do, but at the moment they're not.
So for you, Peter, finally, Leinster versus Edinburgh in the Pro 14 final. That's the way you're
calling it. I hope I'm wrong. Hope it's a provincial derby because they're very special. But certainly on recent form, you couldn't go against Edinburgh. But, you know, a Leinster-Ulster game will be a brilliant game and a brilliant event to look forward to next week. I thought Munster would have put up more of a fight last night, but I thought Leinster would scrape through. 10 points wasn't really an accurate summation of the game. And I think that if Ulster don't have their head screwed on tonight, they could get beaten, and they could get beaten quite heavily.
Okay. Well, maybe it'd be interesting to see how it works out there Edinburgh versus Ulster tonight, the winners to play Leinster in the Pro 14 final. Peter, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Take care. Peter Breen there giving us his insight on how he thinks Leinster will face Edinburgh in the Pro 14 final next week. Do you agree? Text us 087-1155-777 and we'll read out the best of the comments there. Just a couple of quick texts on the rugby. Sean from Dunleary says, have to agree with Peter on the Munster situation. Really sad to see a great province sinking so low at the moment. Hopefully they can make a return pretty soon. Alison from Blanchardstown says, Allez le bleu, Leinster for the double. Can't see them being stopped this year. Ooh. It's very positive stuff indeed. If you agree with her, text us 087-1155-777. Or indeed, if you disagree with her, you can do the same thing. Now, tomorrow afternoon at Parnell Park, the semi-finals of the Dublin Senior A Hurling Championship take place, with the last four teams in the county standing looking for a place in the county final later in the month. So, no better man to guide us through those two games than our good friend of the show here, Brendan McLaughlin of O'Toole's, former Dublin goalkeeper and current goalkeeping coach as well. Don't think I left anything out there, Brendan.
No, I don't think so, Dick. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. How are you, my friend?
Good, good. Excellent. Oh, good.
Looking forward eagerly, I'm sure, to these two games at Parnell Park tomorrow afternoon. First up, we might as well start with the defending champions, Coola, looking to reach the county final for the fifth time in 6 years. Standing in their way are fellow Southsiders, Lucan Sarsfields, who, of course, shocked Kilmacud Crokes the last day out. Willie Maher, the Coola boss, after the last game, Brendan, was making the point that his players felt they weren't getting enough credit. They were being written off in certain quarters in defence of their county title, but the manner of their quarter final victory certainly made people sit up and take notice.
Yeah, as a manager, I suppose Willie would have to, how do you say, create that siege mentality after the loss and the round robin to Nafina, and everybody was sort of going, oh god, is this Coola team on the way down? But obviously after the last game, everybody is saying, okay, it's clueless to lose, because I was really impressed with their first half performance. They had 19 points scored in a half of hurling, which would win any game. All their big men sort of stood up, and they hurled without Con O'Callaghan, but in steps David Tracy, who had an outstanding game. Everything that went to him sort of stuck to him, aided by his brother Sean. And they're just, their link play around the middle of the park is just phenomenal. Like the lad in the in the best position gets the ball always. So, which is, I suppose, a testament of the work that has been gone on before. And they believe in each other, and they're not afraid to give the ball to anybody on the field, because, listen, if you're on that cool team, you've earned it. Mm.
And a new role too for Sean Moran, I notice, in the cooler defence.
Well, see, Sean is just that good that he can play anywhere. You could play him in the full forward line if you wanted. It's just, it's a surety around the middle of the field. Same again as David. Once that ball comes to him, it sticks. And then he links up with other players. You have the likes of Sean Tracy, as I said. You'd Dermot O'Flynn, who was outstanding at wing forward. And obviously you've got Doc in there playing at half-back, where he would have been midfield over the last few years. But they're just really, really good. They're a solid unit, and as I said, they just believe in each other. And obviously with people knocking them over the last couple of months, they sort of said, right, let's show everybody what we're made of and why we are double All-Ireland winning champions and numerous county champions. So, yeah, listen, Lucan are going to have a tough game of it, but after what they've done in the last game against Crokes, everybody would have been thinking, oh, Crokes are going to go between them and Coola to win a county final. Listen, Lucan were just outstanding. Their work rate was phenomenal, and I think it's going to be pretty much the same tomorrow.
Yeah, and from a county point of view, you're talking there about David Tracy and Sean Moran. It's great to see them, amongst others, buzzing for Coola. But on the Lucan side of it, it's more so, in some cases, former stars, the likes of Johnny McCaffrey, who's been outstanding. Matthew has done quite well. Peter Kelly, of course, is continuing to hurl brilliantly for them. And they have Chris Crummy, who's in fantastic form as well. We had a conversation during the week about the progress, Brendan, that Lucan have made. They've been knocking at the door now for a few years, around about this stage of the championship, but haven't got the breakthrough. They'll never get a better chance tomorrow, albeit a tough one against Coola.
Yeah, well, listen, Lucan always had the raw ingredients over the last number of years, but it just didn't click. And Johnny McCaffrey, he's taken over the team, and he, as you said, like, he has a son, Johnny, playing centre-back, his other son, Matthew, wing-back. But then you've got Ronan Smith at midfield, like, who is just outstanding this year. Like, he's been really, really good. His work rate is, he sort of sets an example every time he goes onto the field. And everybody talks of Johnny, Peter Kelly, Chris Crummy, Paul Crummy, and everybody looks at them and go, and rightfully so, geez, they're on fire. But that can only happen when you have somebody like Ronan Smith and Johnny Bellew there, and they're putting in the hard yards, and they're getting the ball to these lads who are able to make the big plays. Like, so, yeah, listen, they're going to have a tough game tomorrow, but if they bring that same intensity and they're, I suppose, the quality of play, like some of the scores they got the last day, I think Chris came off with 5 points. His younger brother Paul, a full forward, came off a 1-3. So, like, when you've got lads like that who can score, let's get the ball to them. They have young Ben Coffey at wing back, at wing forward, hitting the frees, hitting them well. But from play, he's adding an awful lot onto that half forward line where they're going, and they're breaking down half backs with their pure intensity and not letting defences come out with the ball as easy. So I think they're just after tweaking it a little bit, where Chris was always half back, now he's up in the half forward line, and he's becoming a nightmare for centre backs, because they don't know how to handle him. Like, he's 6'4" and he's well able to hurl. He's a great hand, he's a great puck out option for them as well. So, like, for me, it's just slightly in favour of Coola. Just slightly. Listen, if Coola get off to a flyer, let's see what Lucan are made of. But equally, if Lucan get in their faces and they put a big effort in the first 10 minutes and sort of stem the flow for the first 10, they could easily come out with a win. Okay.
So Coola gets the tentative vote of Brendan McLaughlin there. Do you agree? 087-1-1-5-777. Let's move on to the second semi-final then, which is also at the Neller tomorrow, 4:30. Ballyboden St. Enda's taking on Nafina. I watched Bowden against Crokes the first day out and I wondered where they were going. I really did. But it's a complete role reversal. Crokes are out of the championship now and Ballyboden are back in the semi-final stage, Brendan, and by God, they know how to win these games too.
Yeah, it's the old saying, the old dog for the hard road. You look at that Bowden team and you've got Keeney, you've got Paul Ryan, you've got, I suppose, Simo at centre-back, you've James Madden. I see Finn McGarry is in the goal now. They know how to win. They know how to win championships. They're on the road a long, long time. So it was hard coming out of lockdown, and they sort of a little bit flat coming out of that against Crokes, and everybody was saying, "Oh, that's it, Bowden are done." But you can't write teams off like that. Not with the quality that they have. So, me personally, I didn't watch the game against Vincent's, but listening to everybody, they were just Ballyboden of old. They were getting stuck in and they were breaking down the play, and then they were building from defence through the lines. And obviously when you've got Paul Ryan up there, anything can happen. That lad he's just got a bit of magic about him every time he gets inside 21.
But again, from your own perspective in relation to the county team, great to see him buzzing. Great to see Conal Keeney buzzing as well. Now, Nafina, they're a club that have made great strides at underage, Brendan, over the last number of years, and are finally getting the breakthrough at senior level. They've had an excellent season so far. What chances of further progression tomorrow for them, do you think?
If they get all the big players going well, like if Donald Book hits form, there's not a better hurler in the country, let's be honest with you. He's just a serious touch of class, that fella. So Bowden are going to have to do a serious job on him. But they have the two Currys inside there who can turn it on, and between the two of them, they could walk off with 15 points, throw a goal in there as well. AJ Murphy in there, who's doing an awful lot of good work. He's sort of the link play when he gets the ball. He's looking to offload the likes of Donald, and then you've got Sean and Colin Curry coming in. But for me, the defence has been really, really good. Starting with John O'Tracy in goal, solid. Puckouts are really good. He's sort of speeding things up now, and he's getting the ball out to the half back line as quick as possible, which obviously has Paul O'Dea in there, wing back, who's been really good, and obviously you've got Shane Barrett there, who's coming back to form. He's a man mountain there, and if you're going to be Nafina, you're going to have to go through him, which is not an easy thing to do.
So Brendan McLaughlin, expert that you are, we always get the finest experts on this show every week. Coola versus who in the County Senior A Hurling Championship Final for 2020?
I'll just go Nafina.
Ooh.
Youth will come through this, I think.
Ooh, spoken like a true Northsider. You have to get in there for the county final. Three of the four semi-finalists from south of the river, Brendan.
Yeah, well, listen, you look at what Nafina have done over the last 10 years. I think they went 5 years winning minor championships, minor A championships. So that's coming to fruition up in the senior level. They got a really good coach there, their own Roach. I think they're just at the turn in the corner. And I think they could be... If they win one, they could be like what Coola were and what Bowden were before Coola. If they get one under their belt, I think they're going to be hard bet for the next 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Very interesting stuff indeed. So Coola versus Nafina, says Brendan McLaughlin, for the county final. Briefly, Brendan, just looking forward, the inter-county scene is creeping up on us, we hope, and we hope that we do have a championship this year. When do the group come back collectively together to start preparations?
Well, it's after the county final. It's after that. That's just the way it is, unfortunately, the times that we're in. We just have to wait and get everybody back in after the county final and then try and hit the ground running. Hopefully no injuries come back from that. If there's... Like, you don't have a whole lot of time between that and the first round. So, yeah, just hopefully everybody comes back fresh and injury free, so we can listen. Most of the training has been done in anyway because they're with their clubs the last few months, so they're all fine. They're all going well. So, yeah, it's just once we come back injury free, we'll be all systems go. Super. And we'll give it a bit of a rattle.
Well, the very best of luck with it anyway, Brendan. We'll be talking to you well, I'm sure, before that. And thanks very much indeed for your insights this morning, predicting Coola and Nafina for the county final after the semis tomorrow afternoon. Good morning, Margaret, Brendan.
No problem, Declan. Thanks a million again.
Brendan McLaughlin there giving his thoughts on tomorrow's championship semi-finals. Just before we go to the break, just quickly a wrap-up on ladies' football. Foxrock Cabinteely's quest for a sixth county title remains on track. The champions beat Ballyboden St Enda's 4-13 to 3-10. A great win for Nipper McNally's Chargers there last Wednesday. They will meet Kilmacud Crokes in the decider next Saturday at 6 p.m. in Lawless Park, home of Fingallion's GAA club in Swords. The Stillorgan ladies beat Nafina 4-15 to 2-12 in their last four clash to set up a repeat of last year's final, which was an absolute classic, requiring extra time to separate them. That game will be live streamed on the Dublin Ladies Gaelic Football website page next week. Tomorrow, by the way, sees the Camogie final take place in the county as well. St Vincent's, the current queens of the crop, defending champions, taking on Cross City rivals St Jude's. Abbottstown Games National Development Centre there tomorrow at 3 p.m. And that, in the continuing trend, will be streamed live on the Dublin Camogie Facebook page. And finally, just a sad note this morning, the death took place during the week of Tony Molly Malone Brohan. A great character, well known to all Dublin supporters on the Hill, and indeed to many around the country as well. So we send our sincere sympathies to the family there of Tony. On the final furlong of the programme now, which will be football all the way till 11 o'clock with Alan Cawley. Just a couple of text messages on the hurling. Sean from Dalkey, best of luck to Coola tomorrow. Can't see beyond the red and white for the county title this year. And Mark from Ballyboden says the blue and white army are on the roll. Is there anyone to stop us? Well, we'll have to wait and see tomorrow. Now, turn our attention to football, both internationally and domestically. And delighted as always to welcome onto the show our good friend and colleague, Mr. Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Oh, very well, sir. And your good self?
Good, good. Thanks, good Declan. All is well, yeah.
Good stuff, good stuff. No doubt you were glued to the television on Thursday night for Stephen Kenny's first game in charge of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, against Bulgaria. The one-all nations draw with Bulgaria. Shane Duffy popping up with the late, late equaliser. Overall assessment of the first outing for the new gaffer, Alan?
I think it was fairly satisfactory, to be honest with you, Declan. Was by no means brilliant, but by no means disastrous either. And it was probably a lot of what I expected, considering it was only Stephen's, obviously, first game, but also the first time that he would have met up with the players. It would have been fairly... I'm sure he would have had plenty of conversations with them on the phone and Zoom calls throughout the last couple of months since he's been appointed as the manager. But that was the first time he would have met a lot of the group personally. And to have only two or three sessions in the build-up to the game, I felt the performance reflected that as well. But you could also see signs in terms of what he's trying to implement and what he's trying to change. And there was a lot of obviously playing out from the back, the statistics back up, the amount of ball that we had percentage-wise. And you could see that there was a change, but not only is he trying to implement his own philosophy, it's a culture change as well, Declan, as you well know, because these players have been involved in regimes and with managers who've been very negative and defensive for the last probably 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So there's a lot to change and it's going to take time, but certainly as first games go, I'd say Stephen was fairly happy with it, but plenty to build on.
Wouldn't have been too happy with the concession of the goal, the manner of the goal, the gap between his two centre-halves for the Bulgarian lad to get in and apply the finish.
Again, I think that's just a reflection of where we're at in the season, to be honest with you, Declan. And there's going to come periods in the game as well when we're playing, obviously, with the more expansive style that we want to see and we want to play. There is going to be situations where we're going to be a little bit more exposed at the back from what we've seen in previous times when we've had plenty of men behind the ball. So sometimes we might have to live with that, but certainly the fact that the big gap that appeared between the two centre halves. But if you look back at the goal, again, I would give Duffy a little bit of, not so much sympathy, he's at blame for the goal, but certainly a little bit in where we're at in terms of pre-season, because he just looked as though he switched off for that split second, and it could have been down to fatigue and obviously a lack of concentration, because again, as I say, where we're at in the season, None of these players have played at all. It's all pre-season games. And he had a busy week in terms of the move going through with Celtic as well. And if you look at when the ball gets transferred to the Bulgarian midfielder, he just switches off for a second. He drops his head instead of getting round on the cover quicker. Whereas I'm full sure if that was a proper game where he's had 10, 11 games under his belt or were at full speed, I definitely think he would have recovered and would have got engaged with the centre-forward. I agree with you, it was a sloppy goal, but again, I think it's more a reflection of where we're at and the fact that it was the first game.
It was, but he certainly made up with it with the equaliser. Anyway, a powerful header from the corner. And speaking of the corner, the role of Robbie Brady in that as well, a player who hasn't done so well really through injuries and that of late, but if he can show that type of form on a more consistent basis, he's going to be the asset we know he can be for Ireland.
Yeah, a lot of this narrative around, I suppose, the team and you know as well, Declan, because you're obviously involved in it, about the way we're going to play and the style of football and stuff that's going to change. But also, I think along with that, if you add in the likes of Hendrick, the likes of Brady, these players who were more technical players than what we've seen under the likes of Martin O'Neill and Trapattoni when they're asked to do a job more defensively rather than actually when we're in possession of the ball. I think you'll see these boys revitalised by Stephen's approach as well. And I was listening to an interview there with Conor Horahan this morning, and he spoke already of exactly the ideas that Stephen's trying to implement, and they're all relishing the fact that he wants them to play and get on the ball. Because speaking even from your own point of view as a player, you want to play under a manager who allows you to express himself and go out and play and get on the ball and want to make passes and create things. And that's exactly what Robbie Brady is. As you said, since the Euros, he hasn't kicked on. He's struggled with injuries. I also feel he's struggled at maybe the club that he's at because, again, Burnley and Sean Dyche is that type of manager where there's a lot of defending, a lot of hard work, a lot of stuff out of possession of the ball, whereas he wants to be on the ball and be that creative force. So I think that revitalised Robbie. When he came on the other night, I felt he did well. Stephen has spoken highly of him in the build-up to the games as well, so he knows that how talented he is and he wants to get a tune out of him. And sometimes you hear as well with managers, Declan, it might be a case of putting your arm around the shoulder and giving a player confidence. I think Robbie will respond to that, and I think he'll start the game tomorrow based on the fact that he made such an impact when he came on the other night.
Yeah, Finland at home tomorrow in Stephen's first home game in charge, which, as we said earlier on, is going to be such a surreal experience for him because obviously he won't have his family and his friends there, the important people around him, and we wish him and the team well tomorrow. But speaking of the team selection for Thursday night, Doherty getting the nod over Coleman, do you think we'll see a reversal in that tomorrow just to see how it works?
No, I think Matt Doherty is going to be the man for Raith Full now at the moment. I think the only way you'll accommodate Seamus and Matt Doherty is if we play a 3-5-2 system, and you can get the two of them in that way, and obviously have Matt Doherty as a wing-back where he plays at his club. But I think if he goes with a four, you'll see Matt, he's the foreign player, and he's the one that has the jersey, so I'd say he'll hold on to it. I think going into the game tomorrow, Declan, the fact that the Slovakian game is so soon, I don't think there's room to experiment, and that's the problem that Steve will have, and that's why I think he picked his near enough strongest team the other night, and I think it'll be the same tomorrow night. And that's what I would do if I was him, go with your strongest team again that he feels that'll be as close to the 11 as you're going to get out for the Slovakia game, because these games are preparation for that, and he doesn't have much time on his side. All he has really is these two games and a few days in between training to get his message across. So I think tomorrow you'll see probably only one or two changes. McGoldrick, I think, will come back into the side because he's come back into the group on Friday. And also, as I said, Robbie Brady will probably start in the game. The interesting one for me as well is James McCarthy, but I think he'll stick with him because he struggled in the game on Thursday. But again, I think that's a reflection of the fact that Stephen is putting so much onus on his play now. And I think James is going to have to come to the understanding that there's a responsibility on him now to get on the ball and not just to be intercepting and breaking up play. So I think Stephen will stick with him as well, but you will see a couple of changes, but it'll be close to the 11 that you'll see against Slovakia, I'm sure.
I see in social media yesterday, Stephen Rice has landed himself a nice job at Crystal Palace as well, under 23 development coach, so the best of luck to him with that, which brings us nicely to today and Shamrock Rovers versus Bohemians. But before we go into that, a word on Waterford versus St. Pat's last night, Al, down in Waterford. The Pat's season of woe just continues. A fine win though for Waterford.
Yeah, fine win for Waterford. I watched the game. It was a strange game, Declan, because for the first 15-20 minutes, Pat started really well and had a couple of chances. Georgie Kelly and Rory Feely missed one from a corner with a header. And then they gave away a sloppy goal out of nothing, really, a ball over the top, and was a mix-up with Desmond and Brendan Clark. And then they conceded from a corner within the space of another 2 or 3 minutes, and all of a sudden they found themselves 2-0 down. without even realising it. And then obviously they were chasing the game, playing catch up. They never did enough in the second half to try and get back into the game. A couple of half chances. But as you say, it was a good win for Waterford, but very disappointing from a St. Pat's point of view, because we spoke, Declan, 3 or 4 weeks ago after just after the restart and the game they played against Dundalk. And I really felt as though there was a lot of optimism around Inchicore and Stephen and the performance they put in against Dundalk. But since then, they've really struggled and they find themselves in eighth position now. Now, the league is very tight. If you were to win the match or even win two in the trot, you can bounce straight back up the table. So I'm sure Stephen's not overly concerned in that regard, but he'd be very disappointed with the performances over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I think at the moment, it's just to see how they can win a match. I think that's the thing. Now, Rovers versus Bows, it's always special. The latest instalment is in Tallaght Stadium this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Unfortunately, as we know, no fans allowed to attend, and we could have had maybe 7,500 or 8,000 people. But we've got a unique enough position here, Al. Rovers top of the table. Okay, nothing new about that over the last couple of seasons. But Bohemians in second with the opportunity to go top with a win. Couldn't be set up better.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant. And as you see, the only thing missing, Declan, is the fact that we all can't go along and watch it and have 7,000 people amongst us, because these games have turned into spectacles alone, really, and they've turned into a unique occasion in the last 2 or 3 years, because they've been absolutely brilliant. And if we could market the league on these games alone, we'd have some league, Declan, because, as I say, they've been absolutely brilliant. And the added incentive today for Bows is that not only are the games brilliant and a brilliant atmosphere, but as you said, they've the opportunity to go top. And they're the form team. They've been brilliant since the restart. They've won every match. They put in a great performance in Europe as well, only losing narrowly on penalties. And Shamrock Rovers, who we thought 3 or 4 weeks ago would run away with the league, have stuttered in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Obviously, they've drawn against St. Pat's, nil all. They drew against Shelburne, nil all as well. The only beat Cork 2-1 last week in the Cup, but they got through the European game. So they haven't been at their fluent best the last 2 or 3 weeks. So that'll give Bohemians a lot of hope. And Bohemians' record against them as well, Declan, in the last 18 months has been absolutely brilliant. So Keith Long will go there with a lot of confidence. The team will be very confident. Mm-hmm. And I think if they were to come out of it with a point, they're fully capable of getting the 3 points. But I think if Keith comes out of Tallaght today with a point and keeps the gap at 2 points with 8 games to go, he'll be more than happy with that going into the running. And I think they're well capable of getting that point as well.
Yeah, live on Air Sports this afternoon. Unfortunately, as we've been saying, and Alan says that fans can't attend, as we know. Now, Cork City, they make their second visit of the week, Alan, to the capital. They were up here on Monday for a cup game against Shamrock Rovers, which they lost by 2-1. They're back in Dublin today on the north side, facing your old club Shelburne from 5 o'clock. You'd have to think a home win here, would you?
Yeah, you'd fancy Shelburne, and they have picked up as well in the last 2 or 3 weeks. They've a couple of good results, and obviously I watched them in the Cup last week, got beaten first division opposition Galway United, but they beat them comprehensively 5-2. So they'll go into this game with a lot of confidence. They had a good result against Shamrock Rovers as well a couple of weeks back, and I would expect a home win, Declan. These are the games that are going to define the season really for Shelburne, and if they're to maintain their position there in around 6th or 7th or mid-table, they'll be delighted with that in their first season back. Cork, on the other hand, it's been a very, very poor season for them, as we know. We thought things may have turned when they beat Cork a couple of weeks back, but they've lost their last two, away to Derry and away to Shamrock Rovers as well. So they'll be looking to get back on track if they can, but I'm going for a home win here, Declan. Sunshine, 106.8.